This is KOIN Portland. It's 11 o'clock.
CBS News. The nation in New Hampshire as voters prepare to cast ballots in this year's first presidential primary. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS radio network. The balloting in the Granite State may mean little by convention time, but all eyes will be on it in the next 24 hours to see who jumps off to the lead in the primary race. The Republican side seems more important as there are only two major candidates, President Ford and Ronald Reagan. There are a host of Democratic presidential hopefuls, but some of them are not running in New Hampshire. The first results are already in. The community of Dixville Notch had its election at the stroke of midnight, and the 25 ballots were quickly counted. On the Republican side, President Ford bested Reagan 11 votes to 4. On the Democratic side, Jimmy Carter got 6 votes. It was one vote each for Birch Bayh, Morris Udall, Henry Jackson, and former Berkeley, California Mayor Wallace Johnson. In Manchester Monday night, one of the Democratic candidates, Representative Morris Udall of Arizona, was asked how he thinks his party's primary will come out.
I think you've got to give Jimmy Carter the front-runner position at this point, but there are enough undecided that they could split in two or three directions, and we'll just have to wait to see. I think a lot of the voters tonight still don't know how they're going to vote. At least they're not saying. I'd be very happy to come in first, and I'll be pleased with a strong second. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
And Udall says the New Hampshire results will have a psychological and strategic effect on all the candidates. President Ford Monday night told a White House guest he is quite confident and very optimistic about his chances of winning the New Hampshire primary. Also in Washington, controversial New Hampshire newspaper publisher William Loeb says he thinks Mr. Ford will probably win the primary by a narrow margin. More news in a moment.
America is celebrating its 200th birthday. Metropolitan Life has had more than 100. Which birthday are you approaching? At Metropolitan, we'd like to remind you that years and birthdays always pass by sooner than you think. If you want to be ready for the future, you have to prepare for it now. We've spent over a century helping people do just that. And your Metropolitan Insurance representative can do the same for you.
We're helping
40 million. Ford and Secretary of State Kissinger say they do not think former President Nixon was taking a slap at the policy of detente during remarks Mr. Nixon made on his trip to China. In a dinner toast at a Peking banquet, Mr. Nixon called naive the idea that signing a statement or holding a diplomatic conference will bring lasting peace. George Meany, president of the AFL-CIO, on Monday had something to say about the controversy stirred by Mr. Nixon's remark.
We have a discredited ex-president of the United States traveling thousands of miles outside the country to criticize our foreign policy, which is something that I don't think anyone should do. I don't think if there's any criticism of our foreign policy or of our domestic policy. I think there's an obligation of American citizens to make that criticism here at home.
I mean, he says he himself has criticized detente, but he said when he offered his criticism, he did not go to China to do it. President Ford Monday evening hosted a White House dinner for the nation's governors. Earlier, he had something to say to them that the chief executives no doubt were pleased to hear that he favors a 5-year extension of current revenue-sharing programs. The president also said he intends to send to Congress a number of bills to give states more flexibility in providing services to low-income families and funding health and educational programs. The Washington Post reports a House Appropriations Subcommittee has voted in closed session against approval of $500 million in military aid sought by Israel. The Post quoted Subcommittee Chairman Otto Passman as saying President Ford was opposed to any extra funds for the Israelis. The full committee is to act on the matter next week. Now this.
Are you an unpublished author? Do you have a book-length manuscript ready or almost ready for publication? Or do you know of anyone else who is an unpublished author? If so, Vantage Press invites you to write to a leading New York publisher for a free illustrated brochure titled, To the Author in Search of a Publisher. It explains how you may have your manuscript printed and published in a matter of months. Just write to GPO, Box 1414, New York, New York. Whether your subject is fiction, nonfiction, poetry, or even scientific, specialized, or controversial, this 52-page brochure shows you how to arrange for prompt publication. To get your copy, write to GPO, Box 1414, New York, New York. That's GPO, Box 1414, New York, New York. If this is your first book, you'll find this free brochure especially valuable and informative. Write to GPO, Box 1414, New York, New York. GPO, Box 1414, New York, New York.
Secretary of State Kissinger has arrived in Costa Rica from Colombia, continuing his mission to Latin America. Kissinger heads back to Washington Tuesday after a brief stop in Guatemala for a first-hand look at the destruction from that recent earthquake. This is Doug Poling, CBS News.
In Radio 97 News, one man was shot, two others seriously clubbed in a tavern brawl in northwest Portland tonight. Police say the shooting stemmed from a fist fight at Dimitri's Tavern on Northwest 6th. Two men were clubbed in the tavern during a fight over a pool game. The alleged assailant ran. A friend of the injured men allegedly followed the man, shot him on the corner of West Burnside and Broadway. The shot victim is in fair condition at a local hospital. Police say they have a suspect in custody. State health officials are recommending that anyone who purchased animal fiber yarn from Pakistan during the last 9 months take the yarn to county health departments for disposal. Anthrax contamination was found earlier this month in yarn imported by Taki Imports Limited of New York City and Creative Hand Weavers of Los Angeles. The finding was made after a California weaver died of anthrax after using the imported yarn. As a result, retail stores over the nation took the suspected products off their shelves. In Oregon, persons who purchased the yarn were advised by the health division to either seal the yarn in an airtight double plastic bag and take it to a local health department or store the yarn at home until further advice has been given. Portland General Electric Company has challenged the objection of a legislative candidate to the firm's including information on nuclear power plants when it sends out its utility bill mailings. This subject may come up tomorrow when the State Public Utility Commissioner's Office resumes hearings on whether certain types of public utility advertising should be prohibited. The hearings, which have been in recess for a month, resume tomorrow morning in Salem. A somewhat related story, employees at the Trojan nuclear power plant will undergo periodic psychiatric examinations, and all packages entering the plant will be inspected under new security measures announced today. According to a statement on plant security, an ID system to guard against plant infiltration will also be used. Employees of the U.S. Forest Service Regional Office in Portland will begin this spring gathering info on to prepare a management plan for the Hell's Canyon National Recreation Area. And the weather forecast, a chance of showers tonight with occasional showers and periods of partial clearing tomorrow. Overnight lows near 40, highs Tuesday and Wednesday 50 to 55. I'm Tom Morgan. Stay in touch with 97 News.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... I'm E.G. Marshall. You know, I'm always glad to have you in my home. And as I say these words, I think how easily most of us take the word for granted. How much that simple word has been lauded in song and verse. Think of the quotes, home, sweet home. Home is where the heart is. The sacred joys of home. And 100 others. And of all of them, the one which best suits this story. Charity begins... or should begin, at home.
My visitor had come, no doubt of that, and I was ready to go with him willingly. And then, suddenly, I heard Muriel's voice calling me back, and I sensed she was in trouble, that she needed me. So I came back, or awoke, or whatever it was. Did I go beyond the grave? I don't know. I only know it was to the edge. But I came back. And I shall not return till I've done what I was called back to do.
Our
Our mystery drama, The Patient Visitor, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Ian Martin and stars Ian Martin and Marion Seldes. It is sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, Brewers of Budweiser, and Allstate Insurance Companies. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Isn't it nice to know you're free? To see the things you want to see. To touch the heights you dare to reach. To know you're all that you can be.
You seem to be in a hurry, sir.
Yes, I am.
You are in a hurry.
Oh, yes.
Well, no doubt you're rushing down to buy a Buick Electra because you know that Electra has the kind of ride and comfort Buick's famous for.
That's right.
And because you know it's America's second largest selling full-size luxury car.
You got it.
You're hurrying because you want to get there before the Electras are all gone.
That's very good. How did you know I was going to buy a Buick Electra?
Well, it was on the shopping list you dropped back there. You see, dozen eggs, quart of milk, Buick Electra.
Son of a gun, I forgot the pistachio nuts.
That's not on the list.
Well, I forgot them anyhow.
Hello there, this is Jim Backus. You know, I asked my friend, Mr. Magoo, have you ever heard of the disease of prosperity? You probably have, only you've heard of it as heart attack. It's called the disease of prosperity because the risk factors that increase the chances of heart attack are usually the result of prosperous living condition. Childhood habits. Some children get in the habit of watching TV instead of exercising. Smoking often begins in the teens or sometimes even earlier. And by the time they reach middle age, many of them are overweight, inactive, and have high levels of cholesterol and other fatty substances in the blood. High blood pressure is also common at that age. Any one of these conditions or risk factors increases the chance of heart attack. A combination of two or more multiplies that risk. One way you can protect your heart is to see your doctor. Another way is to support your Heart Association's efforts to find more of the answers to heart attack. So give to the Heart Fund now. And thank you very much.
Most of us take it for granted, a roof over our heads. A house, an apartment, a mobile trailer. Somewhere, there is home. But what of all those who don't have a home? Those who are lost, who have outlived their usefulness and their welcome, and don't have a roof over their heads. Suddenly alone and homeless. This is the story of one such uncomplaining but sensible and gallant lady.
Good evening.
Oh. Good evening. Perhaps I've made a mistake.
I hope not. Were you looking for the judge?
Well, for Justin Travers. Isn't this his home?
It is. And I'm just a visitor. Dr. Ridgely, a widower like Justin. We often have dinner together and play some chess. But tonight, he chased me out. And I see why now. You want to see him.
I have to see him. I need a lawyer.
Are you an old friend of his?
Well, yes, but so long ago. Perhaps if you were to mention my father's name to him, he might...
Your father?
Dr. Cyrus Cartwright.
Good heavens. The great heart specialist?
That's right.
Justin speaks of him often.
He was a client of Justin's. His firm, at any rate.
And you must be Muriel, the girl who... beg your pardon. Mrs., I believe.
Mrs. William Parks now, although my husband passed on. What were you saying?
What I shouldn't be, really, except that Justin is expecting you.
Expecting me?
Yes, he said he had an appointment with someone he wanted to meet alone. The rascal. I don't blame him.
Must have grown hard of hearing. There's no one here. Oh, yes, in the big wing chair. I see his hand lying on the arm.
Yes, who is it?
Mr. Travers, someone so far out of the past, I don't know if you'll remember me.
Muriel Parks.
You recognize me by my voice.
Oh, no. By my memories.
But your eyes are closed.
Perhaps. But I still see you as you were, what, over 40 years ago. Small and slim and all abrim with life and the excitement of it. And you had on a mulberry suit and a pink scarf and a ridiculous hat, except that on you it wasn't. And I thought you were quite the most beautiful and desirable thing I had ever seen. Now that I open my eyes, you haven't changed a whit in all those years.
That's an outrageous statement.
Now, where did you come from?
I rang your bell. Dr. Ridgely opened the door. He said something about your expecting me, but how could you?
Well, I don't understand.
He said that you had an appointment with someone.
Yes, I did, but... That will have to be put off. Much more important to see you again, Muriel.
Amazed. Do you even remember me?
Well, how could I fail to? For me, you haven't changed in all those years.
Well, that's very gallant, but scarcely true.
Well, won't you sit down, please, and let me offer you some wine?
Oh, thank you. Perhaps I might sit for just a moment. I feel a little shaky.
I think this might be just the thing to settle us both down. A really fine, dry Amontillado, if I may.
Oh, thank you.
I'm a little shaky myself. To your father, God rest him, and I trust he will me. And to old days, well remembered.
Thank you. I need help.
I only hope I'm able to offer it.
Well, I hope you'll forgive me, but you were my father's lawyer, and I didn't know where else to turn.
Well, Mr. Poindexter, the senior member of the firm, was actually your father's attorney.
The doctor who let me in said that you had been a judge, but that now you're retired.
That's true enough, but not yet dead enough that I can't be exhumed to help old friends. a little more sherry.
Oh, thank you. This is enough to make me quite giddy.
Your eyes as sparkling as they were that first time you came to our office. 1935, maybe, or thereabouts. And you just made your debut.
Considering the times, I should have been ashamed of myself. I was driving my own Packard Roadster. I had a new spring. And I had been to the Patriarch's Ball the night before.
You were the loveliest thing I've ever seen.
Was there ever a world like that? Or was it just a dream?
I remember I cut your picture out of the rotogravure and slipped it into the corner of my dressing room mirror.
Why didn't you ever try to see me?
Oh, I was afraid to. You had every bow and tower at your feet, and it seemed so much time then.
There always does when you're young.
Mm. Besides, I was a good deal older.
Oh, not that much. You might have called.
I might have, but I didn't.
Why?
Because you got married to someone else.
So did you.
Ah, so I did.
And I hear your wife is dead.
Yes, and with her gone, not much to live for. And you?
My husband? Oh, he died a long time ago. Where does it go to, the time? My daughter, too. Now there's just myself and my granddaughter. And that's why I'm here.
Is she in trouble, your granddaughter?
Margaret? Oh, heavens, no. Well, yes, in a way she is. She wants to get married to a fine young man.
But something stands in the way.
Yes, me. Mr. Travers.
Oh, surely, after all, this Justin.
All right, then, Justin. I haven't any money.
My dear Muriel, if that's all
no,
you
no,
could...
Please, I didn't mean that.
What is it, then?
Well, Dick, that's the boy Margaret's in love with, has his own parents to support, and he just can't afford me to. So, since I'm in the way, I've made up my mind to move out.
All right.
Well, I remembered vaguely that my father had left a sum of money in his will to a kind of a home. I was looking at the paper one morning, And there were quite a few advertisements for that sort of thing, and this one just leapt out and met my eye.
Just let me get my specs. Now, let's see here. Cloverdon, a home from home for aged gentlewomen in the twilight of their lives. For women of 65 or over, transfer of property if not willed to relatives, unlimited visiting hours, Long Island, New York, totally supervised with full facilities overlooking the Sound. If home is where the heart is, then Cloverdon is where you belong. Admission fee, $500. Oh, my dear Muriel, you can't consider seriously...
No, that's not the problem, Justin. My mind is quite made up, and for that matter, I've already made the plunge. I didn't have all the money, but I was able to raise part of it.
How?
Well, I sold my wedding ring. It had some diamonds. It's a little old-fashioned, of course, but I got $250 for it.
And they wouldn't accept that?
Well, that wasn't the stumbling block.
Then what?
It's quite a long story, and I'm taking so much of your time.
Muriel, all I mind is your hesitation.
Well, this morning, with the money I'd gotten from selling my ring, I went out to Cloverdon.
Which I will bet overlooks the Sound.
Entirely. It might just as well not be there. It is so far overlooked. How did you know?
Well, I haven't been a lawyer and a judge all these years for nothing.
Justin, it's a dreadful place. I can't even begin to describe it.
Please don't try.
And with all the will in the world, I found it hard to like the woman who interviewed me. I suppose she was trying to be nice.
Well, did you tell her who you were? I mean, about your father?
Oh, yes. Well, that seemed to melt the ice a little.
I can just imagine. Well, tell me about it.
What you're trying to explain is that you don't have the full entrance fee, Mrs. Parks.
I have half.
Of course, and no other assets.
Well, my father gave you our house to be part of your home and some money, I think. I'm sure he did.
It's a little difficult for me, Mrs. Parks. You see, I'm only assistant superintendent of Cloverdon Homes Incorporated, and at the moment, we are full up.
You mean you won't take that?
Oh, no, no. I'm quite sure that... I think I can say without fear... Well, now, I believe it would be better for you to see the superintendent himself, Mr. Blessing.
Oh, could I see him now, then, please?
Oh, Mr. Blessing is seldom out here. Now, you'll have to see him at our New York address.
You mean my old home in New York City?
Yes. But please, let me call him and tell him you're coming.
If you want. If I'd known I could have gone there directly, I wouldn't have had to make this long trip by subway and bus. This is the address you list in your advertisement.
Oh, yes. This is the main institution, but the administration is all handled from New York.
So, back to New York I went. A little upset at the wasted trip, but more than anything, afraid to go back to my past. To the house where I grew up. To the house, I suppose, in a sense, you could say, I hoped to die in. Only mine no longer. And if I lived in it again, only as a guest. And somehow I had the feeling, in spite of all, an unwelcome one. A ghost presence from the past that no one expected or wanted to haunt the present. Have you ever had the feeling, Justin, that if you are not already dead... You should be. That there isn't any place for you anymore.
We'll have to wait for Justin Travers to answer that question for himself. But while we do, you might ask yourself, if not the same question, a like one. Is your life arranged so that you feel you truly belong, that it is vital and worthwhile, and, to use a modern word, viable? If not, how do you make it so? I shall return shortly with Act Two.
Allstate asks, do you own a small business? Go over these questions with your present group health and life insurance agent. If your agent doesn't say yes to every one, then...
Talk to the good hands people.
First question. Does your present major medical benefit keep on paying no matter how expensive the accident or illness becomes? If not...
Talk to the good hands people.
Is your present plan designed to pay up to 95% of hospital expenses? If not...
Talk to the good hands people. You're in good hands with Allstate.
See your Allstate agent to find out what an Allstate plan costs, what is and isn't covered, including benefit reductions and terms under which insurance continues in force. Allstate Insurance Companies, available in most states to businesses that qualify.
This is a message to some very special people. They're special people because even though they may feel fine, they're dying. They're people who have high blood pressure and aren't treating it seriously. If you are one of these people, take a few seconds to listen to some statistics. They may help you add years to your life. Insurance companies have found the higher your blood pressure is, the more years you can subtract from your life. For example, if your blood pressure is 140 over 95, subtract 9 years from your life. And if it's 150 over 100, you could die 16 years too early. Here are a few more numbers to think about. If you don't treat your high blood pressure, chances are 3 times greater that you'll have a stroke, and almost 5 times greater that you'll suffer from congestive heart failure. But you can lead a longer and healthier life if you treat your high blood pressure seriously. See your doctor. Get back on your treatment. Treat your high blood pressure and live. A public service message of this station and the Advertising Council.
Under shaggy eyebrows, the keen brown eyes of Justin Travers burn fiercely. His gaze unwaveringly fixed on the neat little lady beside him. And Muriel Parks is a tidily attractive woman, with her figure still slim and youthful in her 60s, and her silver hair is soft curves framing her alive and surprisingly unlined face like a halo. But in Justin's eyes, she is still that radiant, chestnut-haired girl of 40 years ago, and what is running through his head would be hard to translate.
How dare anyone ever hurt a hair of your head, Muriel? Why, old as I am, I want to leap on white chargers and ride out to do deeds of derring-do in your name. Henrietta, my beloved, my dear wife, I know you'll forgive me. I'm in no way unfaithful to your memory or all our lovely years together. We were meant, destined for each other, and I cannot wait to join you. But we both know that first love has a special glow all to itself.
But if his thoughts were like that, all he said was...
In answer to your question, Muriel, yes. For quite a while I have wished to be dead and out of this world and trying a new one, back with my Henrietta. But I've had my mind changed.
By me? Why?
Oh, a lifetime at the bar, and particularly the years on the bench, have educated this somewhat prominent nose of mine to the stench of injustice. I smell its aroma in what you are recounting to me. Now, you please go on.
Hold on, where was I?
On your way back to what was once your father's house in New York, now part of Cloverden Homes for Aged Gentlewomen.
Yes. Did you ever know the house?
Yes, I think I might have been there once or twice.
On Sutton Place, with a garden that runs down to the river.
Oh yes, don't I remember a boathouse and a dock?
Yes, and above it, high enough to look over the roof and across the river... Do you remember the chestnut tree with the seat halfway round the trunk?
I remember a lovely shade tree just right for the afternoon sun.
That's it. Well, it was all there. I mean, just as it was when I was a little girl, as if I'd never been away.
How beautiful you make it sound.
Oh, how beautiful it still is. I was so stunned to see it all the same that While I was waiting to see Mr. Blessing, I let myself out into the gardens. I was drawn by the tree, just to sit there a moment and look out over the river. But when I got there, there was another little old lady like me sitting on the seat, a bird of a lady with a long feather boa wrapped around her.
A feather boa?
Yes, I was surprised myself. I haven't seen one since I was a child. But she was very sweet, and she said,
"Oh, is there room enough for you to sit down? I could easily move."
"No, no, no. There's plenty of room."
"You know, I love to sit in just this particular spot and watch the boats go by. You can see all the way down to the bridges around the jog if you sit just here."
"I know."
You do? But you're new, aren't you?"
"I used to live here when I was a little girl. This was my house.
Oh.
I was born right there in the corner room on the second floor."
"Oh, really? Isn't that fascinating? Well, that's my room now. Are you joining us?"
"I don't know yet."
"Oh, well, if you do, you shall have it back."
"Oh, no, I couldn't."
"Oh, nonsense. The room you were born in?"
"But I couldn't turn you out. Have you lived here long?"
"Oh, 22 years now. I'm Mrs. Lefferts, Mr. Blessing's mother-in-law."
"That's the gentleman I'm here to see."
"Oh, well, I hope you can arrange to be here. I'd enjoy the companionship. You know, we have something in common."
"We do?"
"Yes. Both of my granddaughters were born here, too. They're over there, see, playing tennis with some of the staff."
"Good heavens, I didn't notice someone
built a tennis court." "Yes, my son-in-law. He knew my Betty particularly loves to play."
"Which one is she?"
"Oh, the blonde one with the pigtails." "That's my daughter."
"How many old ladies are here now?"
"Oh, well, you're looking at the only one."
"Just you?"
"Well, Mr. Blessing's mother lived here until she died quite a few years ago. Now there's only me."
"Which leaves you almost a stranger, doesn't it?"
"Yes, it's quite lonely. Oh, I do hope you'd join us."
"I'd better talk to Mr. Blessing."
"Oh, well, he'll be in the library, second door to the right." "Oh, but of course, since it was your house, you'd know that."
"Well, well, well, how nice to meet you, Mrs. Parks. Come in, come in." "Oh,
thank you."
I'm sorry to have kept you waiting, but, pressure of events. Pressure of events. Allow me to seat you."
"You're very kind."
"Not at all. Not at all. My pleasure. My bent, if I may say so, and, of course, my calling. Well, Mrs. Hatcher has been in touch with me. Matter of fact, I was just on the phone again with her, and I'm happy to say that, in spite of a few difficulties, we have managed to arrange everything."
"You mean I can be accepted?"
"My dear lady, who has a better right?"
"But you realize that I don't have all of the entry fees."
"Whatever you have, whatever you have. The balance would be waived as a matter of course in your case."
"Then I can come with you to live."
"My dear, Cloverden's doors are open to you. After all, your father did leave us a considerable bequest. Most generous man. A true philanthropist. Just as a matter of business, there are certain papers..."
"Oh, before I sign those, may I ask you something?"
"Oh, ask away."
"Do I understand that I will be living here?"
"Here?"
"Well, I was born in this house, you know."
"Oh, were you? Ah, how pleasant. Well, now, we shall have to see what can be done. Such a pity, but for the moment, that won't be possible since we are full up here."
"Oh, but Mrs. Lefferts said that she..."
"Oh, you've met my mother-in-law?"
"Yes. While I was waiting, I sneaked out to have a little look at the garden again."
"So, you had a talk with Lily, Mrs. Lefferts?"
"Well, just a few words, really, but she told me that she has my old room."
"Oh, what a coincidence."
"And she was nice enough to say she'd give it up for me, although, of course, I would never
dream..." "Mrs. Parks, forgive me if this seems a little abrupt, but Mrs. Lefferts, my mother-in-law, is... just a little, how shall I say it? She tends to wander somewhat. Not quite in touch. I'm sure you understand.
My dear, never have guessed. She seems so clear and lucid.
Yes, yes, doesn't she? Well, the fact is... Well, I don't think we need to dwell on it too much. Only that she lives in the past. Another world. We were able to make an accommodation for you at what we like to call the country house.
Well, I won't say I'm not disappointed.
We are really doing what we can, Mrs. Parks, waiving the customary fee.
But I paid $250.
Yeah, well, that's a matter of phrasing. Half the customary fee. And it has taken quite a bit of maneuvering to locate you in what we call one of our deluxe rooms.
But I'm very grateful, of course.
Oh, no need to be, no need to be. Only your due. We'll consider it all arranged, and as the French say, fait accompli. No further red tape, except one little formality. Here, if you would just sign right here, please.
Well, what is it that I'm to sign?
Oh, it's nothing to bother your pretty head about, just lawyer's jargon about assignment of property.
But I haven't any property.
Well, it's perfectly all right. It's just necessary paperwork.
But don't you think I should read it first?
Well, naturally, if you want. It really is the merest formality.
But I think perhaps I'll just take this with me and look it over.
Well, there's really no need.
But you have no objection, surely?
Why, no, of course not. None at all.
And you've brought that paper to me, Muriel.
Well, maybe I'm being overcautious. I just didn't like Mr. Blessing.
I haven't even met him, and already I don't.
I certainly didn't trust him. I suppose it's old-fashioned of me, but for all his manners, he just didn't seem like a gentleman.
Yes, well, he sounds to me like a first-class snake in the grass. May I see the document, Muriel?
Of course.
Thank you.
If you don't mind reading it, you see, I can't make any sense out of it.
Well, naturally, there wouldn't be any need for us lawyers if you could, huh? Mm-hmm. And you say this Mrs. Lefferts was the only old lady you saw there?
Yes, and she even told me she was.
But you saw quite a few other people about.
Well, yes, but all much younger, playing tennis. And she said something about there being her daughter and some of the staff.
I see. How many?
Well, three or four, I suppose. But I peeked into the dining room and the table was set for ten.
Hmm. Yeah. Have you read this yet?
Not all of it. But I told you, it's so difficult to follow.
Well, I'll only read you the pertinent clause and not even all of that. Agrees to transfer all right, title, and interest, both real and personal, in the estate of her father, Dr. Cyrus Cartwright, and to execute whatever instruments may be necessary thereto. You understand that?
Yes.
Why?
Well, I mean, isn't that just customary?
But you no longer have any interest in your father's estate, do you?
Well, no, that's right. I mean, all he left me was gone long
ago. Exactly. So why is it necessary to sign this?
But if I don't, they won't let me in.
I wonder about that. Yes, I think, as we lawyers say, I might just take that under advisement. But not now.
Oh, but I can't wait much longer. I'm already holding up the children's marriage as it is.
Well, we'll try to do something about that, too. But for the moment, I insist on you coming with me.
Where are we going?
To do something I should have had the courage to do 40 years ago. I'm going to take you to dinner, and then I'm going to walk you to your house.
But the paper...
Oh, that's something I shall digest alone, along with a few other musty documents I'll dig up tomorrow morning. First, I want to reread your father's will carefully. And then tomorrow, you and I will pay a visit to your home.
But it's not my home anymore.
Oh, yes, but who knows? In my long and checkered career in the legal profession, I've discovered at least one truism.
But what's that?
That where there's a will, there's usually a way.
Thank you.
didn't seem to be the answer. There was no doubt of its validity and of the fact that the house was deeded and signed over irrevocably. So just what does Mr. Justin Travers, retired lawyer and judge, have up his sleeve besides a funny bone and a wry sense of humor? We'll have to wait for the answer to that when I return shortly with Act Three.
Way back in 1876, it was brewed and aged to deliver a taste, a smoothness, and a drinkability found in no other beer at any price. I'm talking about Budweiser. And it's still brewed that way today, with pride, without compromise, to be the king of beers. The largest selling beer in the history of the world, for one simple reason. That Beechwood-aged Budweiser taste. And that speaks for itself. Hear it talking?
When you say Bud, you say you care enough to only want the king of beers. There is no other one. There's only something left. Because the king of beers is leading all the rest. When you say Budweiser,
you've said it all.
Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis.
You know, traditionally, credit has been a man's realm. But today, as more women become part of the workforce, they are realizing the need to establish their own credit identity. And this is Gene King of the Council of Better Business Bureaus with a few tips for women who wish to establish a credit rating. First of all, open a checking and or savings account in your own name, even if you already have a joint account with your husband. Apply for and use at least two credit cards. Open a charge account in your own name at a local store and establish a line of credit at your bank. According to the Equal Credit Opportunity Act, applicants for credit must be judged on their own merits. And if you feel you've been unjustly denied credit, talk to the credit agency or the lending institution and you just go there and find out why. And if you're not satisfied with their explanation, contact the regional office of the Federal Trade Commission.
As it transpires, Judge Justin Travers has a little more up his sleeve than perhaps even he totally bargained for. Because once he returned from the courthouse and the probate records to spruce up for his afternoon appointment with Muriel Parks, that mysterious visitor he had been awaiting the night before paid his second call. And this time, instead of sending his friend Dr. Ridgely away before the arrival, the judge is constrained to call him to share the appointment.
Oh, well, well, Charles.
Shh, shh, shh. Just take another deep breath. Now, take some of this.
Uh-huh.
Hold it under your tongue.
Oh.
Mm. Now, I want you to tell me when this first started while I phone the hospital for an ambulance.
I don't want an ambulance.
Justin, you're smack in the middle of a coronary. Your life is on the line.
Well, it won't be the first time.
What I'm concerned about is it may be the last.
So be it. I've known for a long time I'm on borrowed time. Up to last night, ever since Henrietta died, I haven't cared. But now I need to borrow just a few more hours. You remember last night?
Yes.
I told you I was expecting a visitor and chased you away.
Good Lord. I took that at face value. I thought you met Miss Parks. You mean this?
I mean I was having trouble concealing from your eagle eye. And I was having what I suppose you would refer to as a coronary episode. And after you left, I never heard the doorbell ring because for this moment I couldn't tell you honestly whether or not I slipped over the border. And then suddenly I heard Muriel's voice calling me back, and I sensed she was in trouble and she needed me. So I came back, or came awake, or whatever it was. Did I go beyond the grave? I don't know. I only know that it was to the very edge. But I came back. And I shall not return until I've done what I was called back to do.
Well, there it is, Justin.
Home for aged gentlewomen. Yes. Well, the circumstances may be singular, but at least the sign is in the plural.
It was so kind of you to come.
Yeah, gate is open. Shall we go in? After you, my dear.
Thank you.
So, these are the gardens. Oh, yes, yes, I recall. And that's the chestnut tree, hmm?
Yes, with the river beyond. It's a lovely prospect, isn't it?
Not nearly so soul-satisfying as the one I have in view. Will you wait for me here while I have a word with Mr. Blessing?
Sorry to keep you waiting, Mr. Travers. You represent Mrs. Parks, I understand. Mr. Cartwright's daughter?
His only issue.
Of course. We must be legally impeccable. Everything fully understood. Open covenants, openly arrived at, hmm?
Exactly, Mr. Blessing.
Well, then, may I take it your client has signed the release? Merely a matter of form, of course, as I'm sure you've told her.
Matter of fact, I haven't. And what you may take, Mr. Blessing, is not any more.
I beg your pardon?
As I understand it, you're the only superintendent of Cloverden Homes Incorporated?
Yes, but for all practical purposes...
But the chairman of the board is Mr. Carter Rensselaer Boyd IV, I believe.
Yeah, that is correct.
And for all practical purposes, I prefer to deal with the principal. The exclusive Mr. Boyd, it seems, has a taste for seclusion. His telephone number is unlisted.
Well, naturally, a man of his eminence...
Well, let's get him down off that eminence, shall we? Suppose you give him a ring in his ivory tower and get him over here right away.
I'm sorry to have to intrude on your privacy, Mr. Boyd.
Well, of course, Plessy, it's most inconvenient. Stop it. Travers? Justin Travers?
Either that's right, sir.
The judge? What does he want with... Put him on.
Mr. Boyd will speak with you now.
Thank you. Mr. Boyd?
Hello there. Is that Justin Travers, judge that was?
Guilty as charged.
Well, bless my soul. I met you once or twice somewhere, didn't I?
Yes, we have met, and we're about to do so immediately again.
How's that? No, not now. Just,
Mr. Boyd, you are the chairman of the board for Cloverden Homes for Aged Gentlewomen, are you not?
Well, yes, have been for 12 years.
Then I advise you to come immediately to the home at Sutton Place.
It's all a mystery, a misunderstanding, Mr. Boyd. I'm sure it'll all be cleared up as soon as Mr. Travers comes in from the garden with Mrs. Parks.
Why do I need him to clear it up, whatever it is? You clear it up for me, Mr. Blessing.
Well, it's only a confusion in, the application of... Well, I mean, Mr. Travers doesn't understand the operations. Well, he's confused in thinking that...
If you ask me, you're the one who's confused. There's Judge now. Perhaps we'll get it straightened out.
Well, not judge any longer, Mr. Boyd. Retired, except for one last case. May I introduce my client, Mrs. Parks, whom I represent as an attorney, of course... Muriel, this is Mr. Carter Rensselaer Boyd,
The fourth.
How do you do?
Mr. Blessing, you already know, of course, Muriel. For your information, Mr. Boyd, Mrs. Parks is the only daughter of the late Dr. Cyrus Cartwright.
Well, good heavens. It's a pleasure, madame, to meet the daughter of one of our institution's main benefactors.
I'm sure she'll be delighted to hear that from you, since we have a complaint to make against the management.
A complaint? Oh, not serious, I hope.
Very serious, sir. When Mrs. Parks applied for admission to the institution, your superintendent, Mr. Blessing, attempted to coerce her into signing a document waiving her interest in her father's estate.
You mean Mrs. Parks is an applicant for admission to the hounds?
Mrs. Parks has suffered, among other things, financial reverses.
Oh, I'm so sorry. But of course, room shall be made for her at once.
Well, I've already arranged that. I've done everything possible, including waiving payment for admission.
To that snake pit, that bedlam you allow to decay and rot without one thought for its occupants out on Long Island. But not here. Not to her father's own house.
You see, I was born here, Mr. Boyd, right under this roof, and it would mean so much to come back.
Oh, Blessing. Why can't she?
Well, because we are full up.
Mr. Blessing, let me ask you, how many inmates have you accommodated here in the last 18 years?
Why, a good many. The number varies.
How many at present?
Well, at the moment, only one.
And her name?
Mrs. Leffert.
Who happens to be your mother-in-law.
Well, yes, but...
Is she enrolled as an inmate?
Well, no, but she is an old lady.
And so, if Muriel will pardon me for saying so, is Mrs. Parks.
Oh, it's all right, Justin. I qualify.
Now, Mr. Blessing, yesterday when Mrs. Parks was here, she noticed that the dining room table was set for 10. Were you having a party?
Well, of course not.
Well, then it's customary.
Well, yes.
Who are the 10?
Inmates, members of my staff, and my family.
How many in your family?
6.
Counting your mother-in-law?
No, that would make,
7.
Judge Travers.
Travers, attorney, as of now.
Yes, well, Mr. Travers, I don't think this is necessary if you're trying to prove that there's room here for Mrs. Parks. I'm sure we'll agree that it can be made.
Will you also agree that this property has never been used as an old lady's home? Would you please repeat what Mr. Blessing's own mother-in-law told you?
Oh, I'd be happy to. She told me that she'd lived here for all the 22 years that her son-in-law had been superintendent. And there have never been any old ladies here, except herself and Mr. Blessing's mother, till she died.
Isn't this just a question of management?
Well, of course. This is administrative headquarters. We own the property to use as we see fit.
Oh, do you? And can you? Gentlemen, have you ever read the exact wording in the will? As I see you haven't. Well, then allow a lawyer to read it to you. To the Cloverton Home for Aged Gentlewomen Incorporated, I give the sum of $25,000 together with my home and furnishings in Sutton Place, provided that these premises and their appurtenances shall be used for an old lady's home. Otherwise, said house and furnishings shall become part of my residuary estate.
Well, what about it?
Simply that my client, Mrs. Parks, née Cartwright, happens to be the residuary legatee of her father's estate. And since your corporation has never satisfied the terms of the will, this house legally reverts to her.
Good Lord. Is this true, Judge Travers?
Well, if you want my opinion, I can assure you that it is, as your own lawyers will tell you.
That won't be necessary. Blessing. You're fired.
What? But where will I go? Are you going to put me out of my home?
Your home? Mr. Blessing, this is Mrs. Parks' home. De facto and de jure. The rest of us are only trespassers.
Justin, you must be tired.
Yes, I am a little. pleasant looking out at the river. One more river to cross.
What?
Oh, I was just thinking how peaceful it is. Under the tree. How happy I am for you, Muriel.
Yes. But I've been thinking, I don't think Mr. Boyd should resign as he plans to. I'm not that old yet. I'm strong and healthy. I don't want to spoil my father's wishes. So why can't the corporation keep the property, turn it into a real old lady's home, and let me run it as resident manager?
Well, if that's what you want, I'm sure it can be arranged.
I would, but only if Mrs. Lefferts can stay and be my first guest. I know she wants to, and I'd like her to. She really is a dear little thing.
And so, may I say, are you. Goodbye, Muriel.
Must you go so soon?
Actually, I'm going very late.
Thank you for riding to my aid, Sir Knight.
I never could resist a damsel in distress. You'll excuse me. I have an appointment I have to keep.
Justin, hold on. The ambulance will be here any moment.
It's too late. Doesn't matter. I'd rather die here. My old wing chair.
Well, I'm not going to let you.
You can't stop it, Charles. You know, I really died last night. But I had to see Muriel safe. Now my old chariot can spread its wings. That's my transport now.
Justin.
It's all right, Charles. All right. Muriel's found her home. And now I'm going back to Henny. And mine.
Requiescat in pace, Justin Travers. 78 full years. And a man, when he has to go, should be able to bow out on a note of triumph. No need to mourn him. Just remember him. Dr. Charles Ridgely had the headstone inscribed aptly. We shall not look upon his like again. I'll be back shortly.
Dreams. We all seek to understand the many ways in which God reveals his word. The book of Job says this about dreams. God speaks first in one way and then in another, but no one notices. He speaks in dreams and visions that come in the night. When slumber comes on mankind and all men are asleep in bed, then it is he whispers in the ear of man, or may frighten him with fearful sights and turn him away from evil doing to save his soul from the pit. So listen to your dreams. They could guide you to new and positive directions. For your free booklet on dreams, write to the Foundation Church, 1147 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10021. That's the Foundation Church, 1147 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10021.
Sweet and haunting story when all is done, and one question always lingers in my mind. Would Justin Travers' obituary have appeared a few days earlier in the paper if Muriel Parks had not come back into his life? For certainly the visitor he expected that first night was the one he was there to greet the following one. Well, it's an idle speculation because, of course, We'll never know. Our cast included Marion Seldes, Ian Martin, Robert Dryden, Ken Harvey, and Bryna Rayburn. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
Kidnappings are usually planned, Mr. Mellon, and very often there's some inside connivance. Now, could one of your servants have overheard your daughter and Jeffrey Pollard make plans for the evening?
But you may have traitors among your workers. I have none in mine.
How would the kidnappers know they'd be parked at that hamburger joint?
How would they know? Well, I ask you, Inspector, where else do young people end the evening in this town?
Who would want to harm your daughter?
You have a one-track mind, and it leads nowhere. My daughter is the sweetest, most generous child. So gentle, so sensitive. She's not like so many of today's depraved young people. She's not a part of this drug-crazed, whatever they call it, culture.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
KOIN Portland Music Radio 97. Bill Garrity and the Moon Watch is next after the news at midnight.
CBS News. President Ford and former Georgia Governor Jimmy Carter have notched initial victories in New Hampshire, but that's only on results from one small town. Most primary voters start going to the polls in 3 hours. Good morning. I'm Mike Stanley reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The early bird voters in the resort community of Dixville Notch, all 25 of them, had their preferences counted shortly after midnight. 23 registered voters cast their ballots precisely at midnight. 2 absentee ballots also were counted. The results? President Ford outpolled Republican challenger Ronald Reagan 11-4. Write-in candidate Wallace Johnson, the former mayor of Berkeley, California, got 1 vote. Carter led the field of Democrats with 6 votes. Morris Udall, Birch Bayh, and write-in candidate Henry Jackson got 1 vote each. On the eve of New Hampshire's first-in-the-nation primary, President Ford hosted a black-tie White House dinner party for the nation's governors. He praised them for cooperating with him on the subject of federal revenue sharing, in contrast to the behavior of a Congress with which he said he disagrees quite violently. And the president told Maine's Governor James Longley he's quite confident and very optimistic about his chances in the New Hampshire primary. Reagan, who concluded campaigning for the New Hampshire primary on Sunday, has switched his focus to the Midwest. CBS News correspondent Barry Serafin is traveling with the candidate.
Reagan, stumping through western Illinois, has followed his pattern of not mentioning President Ford by name, but criticizing many Ford administration policies, saying the administration's foreign policy has vacillated, charging the Angolan situation has been badly handled, calling a raise in Social Security taxes a band-aid approach, characterizing farm policy as stop and go. But Reagan told CBS News the race between him and Mr. Ford boils down largely to the question of whether a Washington insider or outsider could do a better job.
I doubt that anyone who's been a part of the Washington establishment for a quarter of a century can ignore the ties and the bonds and the personal relationships to make the decisions that have to be made if you're going to reduce that bureaucracy and the size of government.
Reagan will return to New Hampshire for that state's primary results, results he hopes will launch a bandwagon effect for him in subsequent primaries, including the one here in Illinois, March 16th. Barry Serafin, CBS News, Peoria, Illinois.
More news following this message.
Are you an unpublished author? Do you have a book-length manuscript ready or almost ready for publication? Or do you know of anyone else who is an unpublished author? If so, Vantage Press invites you to write to a leading New York publisher for a free illustrated brochure titled To the Author in Search of a Publisher. It explains how you may have your manuscript printed and published in a matter of months. Just write to GPO Box 1414, New York, New York. Whether your subject is fiction, nonfiction, poetry, or even scientific, specialized, or controversial, this 52-page brochure shows you how to arrange for prompt publication. To get your copy, write to GPO Box 1414, New York, New York. That's GPO Box 1414, New York, New York. If this is your first book, you'll find this free brochure especially valuable and informative. Write to GPO Box 1414, New York, New York. GPO Box 1414, New York, New York.
Robert Pollard, the project engineer who quit the Nuclear Regulatory Agency this month in protest against safety standards at nuclear power plants, has testified before Congress. CBS News correspondent Nelson Benton has that story.
Pollard had alleged that the NRC was not fully disclosing to the public the dangers in some nuclear plants. Before the Joint Congressional Committee on Atomic Energy, Pollard was questioned by Senator John Pastore.
What I'm trying to find out, is it the matter of economics, is it the matter of disposal of waste, or is it because you feel that these reactors have deficiencies that cannot be corrected?
I resigned solely because I came to believe that the job I was hired to do, namely to enforce the regulations and ensure adequate safety, was being evaded by the agency.
An official of Consolidated Edison of New York accused Pollard of seeking to unduly frighten the public and manipulate the news media with his resignation. Pollard had criticized Con Ed for lack of safety at one of its nuclear plants. Nelson Benton, CBS News, Washington.
Now this.
Hello, world. Denny Bracken here with the Big Daddy of the Bayou, Mike Roy. Now, we're going to take you to the Deep South tomorrow on the Cook Thing over the CBS radio net. And now, from out the bayou steps, Mike Roy. What you got on that plan today, Chef?
I'm going to put on a record of Louis Armstrong to begin with. We'll make a little Louisiana classic chicken creole.
Mm.
So hit for the bayou, get the wading boots on, and get the fish out and the whaling.
Make me an appointment on the French Quarter tomorrow, friends, for Mike's Cook Thing here on CBS.
Hello, this is Aretha Franklin speaking for the March of Dimes. Ever feel as though you had 1,000 different problems you didn't know how to tackle? Well, the March of Dimes copes with that many problems every day. There are over 1,000 different birth defects, and the March of Dimes is seeking ways to prevent them through research, medical service, and public education programs. The work the March of Dimes does today makes for a healthier tomorrow for our children. Give generously to the March of Dimes.
The on-again, off-again romance of Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor appears to be somewhat off again. Burton announced last night in New York that they've separated for a second time, but declined comment on whether a second divorce looms for the couple. They were married first in 1964, divorced in 1974, then remarried last year. Mike Stanley, CBS News.
6 minutes after 12 midnight on Music Radio 97 for a Tuesday morning, February 24th. Good morning, my name's Bill Garrity. I'll have local news for you at 12:30. If you have any requests that you'd like to call in, 221-1763 or toll-free from Vancouver, 694-3622, we'll try to get them on.